Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 11, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. In agricultural news, Canada and South Korea have struck a free trade agreement. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason talks with a Purdue University economist about the impact of PEDV for April and May hogs. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures traded on this Tuesday. Hard red winter wheat, the May variety, settled at 722.5, down 9.5. July, 725, down 9. Soft May wheat, the settlement there, 659, up 18.25. July, 664.25, up 18.25. March corn, 478, up 6. July, 487, up 4.75. December, 481.25, up 3.25. March soybeans, 14.11.5. The settlement was down 7.75. July settled 13.91.25, down 3. November soybeans were up 13 on the settlement at 11.89.5. March soybean meal, 452.30, down 40. March soybean oil, 43.51, down 13 cents. April live cattle, 143.45. They were up 30 on the day. March feeder cattle, 173.95. They are up 25. April lean hogs, 117.15, up 115. And they were as high as 118.57.5 today. And those are the settlements on this Tuesday afternoon. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that much of Brazil will continue to see favorable conditions for crop development through the next 2 weeks. Portions of Paraguay into northern Rio Grande do Sul are short on soil moisture and will benefit from rain expected Thursday into Saturday. Rain will be restricted through the next week from Minas Gerais into Bahia and Espírito Santo. For Argentina, a couple more days of mostly dry weather will occur before rain increases Wednesday into Thursday. Heavy rain will fall on northeastern Argentina, while other areas see lighter amounts of rain. Field work should resume when several days of mostly dry weather follows. One area that remains unfavorably dry extends from southern La Pampa into southern Buenos Aires. This minor crop-producing region will see some rain Wednesday into Thursday, and then we'll see little additional rain through the remainder of the next 2 weeks. High temperatures in Argentina through Sunday will be in the 80s with some lower 90s in the north and some 70s in the south. Back in the U.S., the forecast is a little wetter today into Wednesday from Missouri into the eastern Corn Belt, as rain and snow accumulations will be more significant than what was advertised Monday. Snow tonight into Wednesday will be the greatest from northeastern Illinois into northern Ohio and southern Michigan, where totals will be 4 to 9 inches and locally more. Lighter snow will extend to the west and north into parts of northern Missouri, Iowa, southern Minnesota, southern Wisconsin, and eastern South Dakota.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
I want to talk a little bit about what a volatile day it was. One moment you would look and the grains were up, and the next minute you'd look and they were down, and then they were up, and then they were down. It was just back and forth day.
It was a quite active day, quite active trading. The beans were overshadowed with a lot of spread unwinding, buying the new crop, which they've been selling, and selling the new crop, which they've been buying along the way and taking profits on that. The corn, basically, when we come in, though, it stayed up pretty good on the day. We're seeing that there seems to be a little bit of concern about what is happening in Ukraine. There doesn't seem to have been any disruptions, any shipments yet, but a lot of talk on whether they'll be able to get their inputs to put out the crop.
Did that talk about Ukraine also then impact the wheat market as well?
I would say it definitely impacted the wheat market. That's where all the activity was, and it was up and wild. I mean, we closed 18 and a quarter cents higher in the July wheat, and that was even 8 cents off its high. So we were up as much as 26 at one time today, Dave.
Trading much that way. Trading range of 30 and a quarter cents, actually.
Yeah, and that's the day after the report, not the day of the report. That's sort of wild in itself. You know, another thing that helped strengthen the corn market, Dave, was there's some reports coming out of South America that their second crop corn might be delayed getting planting enough that it will harm their yields on some of that. We didn't see that yesterday in the USDA WASD report, but we are hearing rumors and publications coming out down there saying it could be that all of the second crop corn doesn't get planted or timely planted.
Well, that would be a significant amount of corn, wouldn't it? What would be the second crop?
Yeah, it's sizable, and I mean that's why they didn't think they made adjustments yesterday. Was there still time? But it does look like with the forecast that they have that it could actually delay some of that and not be timely.
Do you have any sense of how that could impact Brazilian exports?
Well, I mean, of course, if they don't have it, they can't ship it out. And, of course, we are figuring for the world supply that they be producing a fairly sizable crop here this year.
As well as maybe even shipping some ethanol to the U.S. as well.
Yeah, well, we'll hope that doesn't happen.
So it was a wild and woolly day. But the wildest and the wooliest part of the day wasn't even in the grains. It was over in the lean hog pit.
Those hogs have been wild, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking a range from 115, 17 and a half on the low side to 118, 57 and a half on the top.
That is quite a range, I'll tell you. And, we're ending up stronger. We're talking about the PED deaths, the amount of hogs that aren't going to be available, and the slaughter and the demand by the packers here right now. And we're seeing quite wild fluctuations here as we look at all that, Dave. And, we're not sure where these are going to top out. I mean, we just know that there's a very big demand for meat and, what price is going to curtail it.
The last number I saw was 4 million deaths in the U.S. by PEVD, but I'm sure that number is probably, an old number, and it's quite a bit higher by now.
You know, we lived through TGE when we raised hogs. When I was in 4-H and raising hogs that way, and that was devastating. I think this is even a little bit stronger and a little bit worse than TGE was.
So $90 cash hogs, and those numbers, though, have yet to be really reflected on the retail level, have they?
Actually, the pork has been quite the feature in the grocery stores
here
along the way. I bought some loins this last weekend at $1.89 a pound, which is unbelievable. That's good when we were paying that and thought it was tremendous when pigs were cheaper. So I don't know, but it's going to have to come up because they can't continue to pay this and have pork as specials in the grocery stores week after week.
So is this the kind of trade we're going to have on the balance of the week, this kind of volatile, wild, and woolly trade?
It sure seems like it, Dave. I think that, we saw the funds protecting their positions in the grain today. We saw quite a bit of buying come in there. You know, we actually saw a reversal day up as we look at things. We put things in sort of a positive trend mode for here now, but how far can we take them for right now? It's going to be the question mark, because everything we look at ahead to the March 31st data looks like it could show bearish numbers.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say next, is we haven't even really factored in the end-of-the-month report. I know traders are beginning to mull about it, but you don't hear it being rattled all over the marketplace heavily yet.
No, I mean, basically, and we know that the government should find some extra acres to divvy up between
right.
corn and beans. We know that the stocks, we feel that with the numbers that we said we lost in the hogs and not as many cattle placed, it's awful hard to say we should be using as much corn as the first quarter usage said, and along those things. So, you know, all those things, if they come to fruition, aren't positive the grains.
So what is your sense of how producers have marketed? I know when we were on our winter tour of different cities and we would ask farmers where they are, they didn't do much. Do you think they did quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, especially
no,
in the last week?
I really don't think they have, Dave. I think that all the advisory firms told them they should have, and they see that once again, maybe we got a little anxious on telling them they should have. And I think they're pretty stubborn marketers at this point in time.
So how does that play out? Will it take out better? I guess the question is, will basis have to come to the rescue?
Well, I think along the way that $5 corn might come to the rescue, because I think that's a number they're all waiting on.
$5 corn and $11.80 beans. Who would have thunk that just about 5 or 6 weeks ago?
I wouldn't have.
It's amazing. Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave. Bye.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana. He joins us every Tuesday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. In agricultural news, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development today says that the U.S. Federal Reserve should proceed cautiously in scaling back its asset purchase program while signaling its intentions clearly as so to minimize the impact on developing economies. The OECD also warned that China could experience a sharp slowdown if there were to be problems with debt repayments. The OECD slashed its forecast for annualized growth in the U.S. economy during the first quarter of this year to 1.7% from 3%, and raised its forecast for the Eurozone to 1.9% from 1%. In its World Economic Outlook, the organization forecasts global growth of 3.6% this year from an estimated 2.7% in 2013. Chinese research funding into genetically modified organisms has fallen by 80% over the last 4 years as Beijing faces public unease over a technology it has been promoting to boost food security. China's spending on GMO research fell to around $65.38 million in 2013. China has also delayed approval of new strains of imported GMO corn, such as the MIR-162 variety. China's government had urged its scientists to take a global lead in GMO, although it had been reluctant to commercialize GMO crops given public concerns over health risks. Chinese officials offered no reason why GMO funding is lower. Canada's government is threatening fines that could run as much as $90,000 per day for railroads that fail to meet minimum shipment levels established by the government. According to Canada's government, the two major rail companies in Canada, Canadian Pacific and Canadian National, each will be required to ship at least 500,000 metric tons of grain per week. The requirement takes effect immediately, and it is to remain in place at least for 90 days. According to media reports, the rail car order backlog in Canada tops 60,000, 8 times higher than a year ago. USDA is emphasizing some of its programs to help smaller and mid-sized farmers and ranchers Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced the support initiative yesterday after speaking to members of the National Farmers Union at the group's annual meeting. Nearly 1.5 million farmers and ranchers reported farming fewer than 180 acres, that according to the 2012 Ag Census, or more than 70% of all farm operations. USDA also intends to broaden the National Farmers Market Directory to include community-supported agricultural co-ops, on-farm stores, and food hubs. South Korea and Canada have reached a free trade agreement that the two governments hope will boost exports and investment. After more than 9 years of negotiations, the two countries say they would remove tariffs on most goods within a decade. Canada agreed to eliminate tariffs on South Korean autos within 2 years of the deal being ratified. South Korea will reduce tariffs on Canadian beef over 15 years. Seoul currently imposes 40% tariffs on Canadian beef. It is Canada's first free trade agreement with an Asian nation. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. There is a question circulating furiously through the nation's hog barns, on the trading floor in Chicago, and in corporate boardrooms. Everyone wants to know how many pounds of pork are going to be available in April and May. Todd Gleason has more with a Purdue University ag economist.
PEDV stands for Porcine Epidemic Diarrhea Virus. This disease has been spreading through the nation's hog barns since last summer, and producers haven't been able to control it. And the spread has become so wide it has caused the price of pork to skyrocket on fears there will not be enough supply to meet demand. Well, Purdue Extension Ag economist Chris Hurt has pondered the price spike and the reality behind it.
So far this year, the number of animals coming to market has actually been very close to the numbers indicated in the USDA December Hogs and Pigs report. When adjusted for the number of slaughter days compared to last year, the slaughter count so far is down about 0.5%. However, market weights, of course, have been higher by about 2.5%, and that is resulting in total pork production being up about 2%.
So, to this point, the supply of pork has been impacted sharply by the disease. However, the markets are looking forward into March, April, May, June, and July.
The lean hog futures market has extremely high price expectations for the March through July period this year. This is apparently due to the expectations of small slaughter supplies due to the death losses of PED. Projected lean hog prices for this March to July time period are about $105 on a lean basis on average, and that compares to a much more modest $86 for the same period a year ago in 2013.
If the low hog supplies are thought to be the cause of the sharply higher prices, then Hertz says it appears the trade believes the number of hogs coming to market in the March to July time period will be down 7 to 10% from the previous year. It's a sizable drop that does not correlate well with USDA production figures. However, it may be that many of the piglets counted by the agency in December died from the virus. This is what the high price is alluding to for the second quarter.
The third quarter 2014 supplies this year are going to be drawn heavily from the winter farrowings, and here's where the numbers get very uncertain. Winter farrowing intentions were actually up 1.3%, but since the PED virus kills the baby pigs, the number of pigs weaned per litter could have been down sharply. This is where nobody knows for sure.
It'll be a difficult period for those pricing pork. For instance, if, as Hurt believes, the second quarter slaughter numbers are off 3 to 4% rather than 7 to 10% like the trade believes, well, then the market has rallied far, too far, already. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us for our look at the energy markets is Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services. He is in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon.
want to begin our talk with events in Ukraine. A lot of people are keeping an eye on that, as well as what's going on with China's economy. In the grand scheme of things, how are these impacting energies?
Well, certainly, initially, I think that political tension in the Ukraine did actually feed some risk premium into the crude oil, at least, not necessarily the products. But I think people are coming to the conclusion that it actually improves the outlook in terms of supplies by forcing a reassessment of maybe U.S. energy policy to one that will help Europe become less reliant upon Russian imports. That in itself has led to some weakness here. The past 2 days, we got up to as high as 103. We're currently trading in the crude just under $100. I think generally Russia needs money to support some of their expansionary ambitions. That, along with some of the Chinese problems, certainly could lead to some questions about the demand side as well.
On the technical picture, we've made new lows for the move in the trading session today. Should we pay any attention to that in particular?
I think so. You know, this market's had a lot of problems holding value above $100, and rightfully so. The prospect that stocks will be building up along the Gulf Coast as we move into refinery maintenance certainly is a distinct possibility and could undercut this market even further. I maintain that we are looking at a surplus situation as we move through this year. I still feel that's on track. We've seen some increases out of Saudi Arabia in terms of their production levels, along with some other producers. And certainly the U.S. is becoming less and less reliant upon other producers for their crude oil, with imports dropping pretty sharply against 2 years ago to around 7.1 from around 8.7 at that point. So I think there's a lot to say that this market probably is overpriced. The product markets, certainly watch those closely. The diesel, ultra-low sulfur diesel, has taken some, has seen some pressure. I think that could actually improve its margin against the crude oil as we move into refinery maintenance.
I think the other thing that producers are very concerned about is natural gas, and virtually no carry in this market. It is pretty flat all the way out into September.
And rightfully so. We've taken down these stocks to almost half of what they were a year ago, to some of the lowest levels that we've seen since 2003, March 2003, are going to end it at very low levels, around 860 BCF. That, along with propane inventories, which certainly has hurt a lot of people, need to be watched closely in terms of being rebuilt here at some point as we move through the year and ahead of next winter.
Thank you much, Steve.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That's Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services, and he is in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, have you tried this website yet? WILL. WILLAG.org. There you'll find a way to link up to our free Aggie newsletter, which comes out every weekend. We hope you take advantage of that. Go to our website, WILLAG.org, and the link for subscribing is in the right navigation window. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. National Oatmeal Nut Waffle Day. Waffles have been around at least since the time of the Greeks. The Dutch brought the waffle to the U.S. in the 1620s. The patent for the first waffle iron in the U.S. was issued in 1869. The cast iron plates sat on top of wood or gas stoves. The first electric waffle maker was produced by General Electric in 1911. By the way, the waffle iron was the inspiration for a new sole for running shoes in 1971. The company was Blue Ribbon Sports, which today is better known as Nike. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, Samuel Mulliken of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, received a patent for a machine to thresh corn and grain. He was the first person in history to receive more than one patent. We don't know what the machine looks like. The patent was destroyed in a fire in 1836. In 1845, self-rising flour was invented by Henry Jones of Bristol. The flour was an instant hit. A year later, in 1846, Jones was appointed purveyor of patent flour and biscuits to Queen Victoria. Jones spent a number of years trying to convince the Royal British Navy to use his flour. Eventually, he was successful, but only with the help of Florence Nightingale. And in 2007, on this date, the U.S. moved daylight savings time 3 weeks earlier than in previous years in the hopes that it would conserve energy. The concept was first introduced during World War II in Great Britain as a coal-conserving measure. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
We usually start in South America at this time of year, but I think given the timing of the big storm heading our way overnight and into tomorrow, we ought to touch on that first. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, without a doubt. We've got a real strong, moist system that's got all the right ingredients to be a big snow producer for many areas of the western and northwest corn belt. This system is going to hit central and northern Illinois, central and northern Indiana, southern Michigan, portions of Missouri, and getting as far west as extreme eastern Iowa with some heavy snow, much colder than normal temperatures. And the air coming in on the backside of this system, Dave, is very cold for March. We're going to put snow on the ground, and then we're going to get really cold for a couple of days. And I guess the good news is that this will be a wet storm. Amounts of precipitation, liquid content is going to be well over an inch in some areas. That will pay dividends later, but that's not going to make anybody feel good in the short term about having to deal with another winter storm.
So accumulation totals 6 to 9, that sort of thing?
Yeah, 6 to 9 to 10. I think there's going to be some pockets where there could be areas that are going to go over a foot.
Let's talk about that into the spring for a moment. There's been a lot of talk in the trade about potentially a late plant, in part because the frost level is so deep. I was talking to some people in Peoria who were digging holes, and they were telling me 6 feet is not uncommon.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite remarkable. Here we are, March 11th, to do that. And not only do we have to consider that, but we have to look at the record ice extent on the Great Lakes. And that may have somewhat of a cooling impact this spring season in the Midwest. Also for what we're seeing long term, there's nothing that would indicate a really fast, consistent warm-up this spring. So it's going to be a slow start to the season.
All right, let's turn our attention then to South America. What are prospects there?
Well, the conditions right now in Brazil and Argentina both are looking fairly dry. So for any harvest operations, it does not look like they're going to see anything too big coming. There's a couple of systems that could produce a little bit of precipitation, but right now it doesn't look like any delays.
At the end of the day, what are we left with in terms, I'm going to go back to the U.S. if I may, about prospects into the summer? And you can look at whether it's El Nino or La Nina, I don't know which one we're in at the moment, but longer-term prospects.
Well, that's very interesting in terms of, you know, bringing up that question, because a lot of folks are asking about that right now. And you know, right now, standing where we're at, it does look like we are going to have at least a weak El Nino developing this season and into next fall and winter. Doesn't look like it may be terribly strong, however. And with the winter we just had, prospects of a cool, wet spring, that would lend itself to at least a summer temperature pattern that's going to be close to normal. If we do see some dry areas, it's going to favor the southern and western areas.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.